Welcome, everyone, to another amazing episode. I hope it's amazing, at least. We're going to have an amazing episode today. My name is Andrew. I'm hosting today's episode of the Average Ontario Angler Podcast. Jesse is with me riding shotgun, and we are on episode number 49, and it's time to discuss one of my favorite topics. It was actually one of the first topics we ever discussed on the podcast. It's talking about spring pike. How excited are you about spring pike, Jesse?
Well, early spring pike is super exciting, and we had a really good experience a few days ago. So
Jesse got it out of his system.
Yeah. No, I'm just getting started. But yeah, no, I'm super excited. I know a lot of guys like steelhead fishing during the spring, but for us, we both really like pike fishing. So I'm excited for this episode. Actually, last year's episode on spring pike fishing was one of our best, most downloaded episodes. So let's do another good one, Andrew.
All right, I'll do my best. We're going to bomb it though, I'm sure. I mean, bomb those pike right into the boat. Yeah. So we have, as usual, we're going to have an interesting fishing fact, which Jesse has prepared for us. And then we're going to launch ourselves right into the open maw of the great pike topic. But first, Jesse's interesting fishing fact. Take it away.
All right. So we did have a very exciting story to tell about spring pike fishing, but I'm not going to get into that. But the fish that I did catch, I'm going to talk a little bit about the lure that I used to catch it, because it's a brand that me and Andrew have started using in the last maybe 2 years. And it's a brand that I highly, highly recommend now, not just because that the fish that I caught last week, but overall, we've caught tons of different fish on them. And that brand is Duo Realis. Duo. They're really cool baits. I've seen them in stores for a long time, and they're a JDM bait. Andrew will tell you, what does JDM stand for? I'm sure we've all heard the term fly around in the fishing industry.
It's Japanese something something.
Japanese domestic market. So a lot of times you'll see all these baits and they'll say, oh, it's JDM. And you might say, well, I know that means it's from Japan, but it basically means it's a bait that is made, produced, and some of these baits were originally only sold in Japan, and now they're more popular coming to North America. So what are some brands that are JDM except for Duo Realis, the one that we're talking about today? We may think of popular baits like Megabass. Megabass is probably the most popular JDM brand. All their baits are, you know, made in Japan and designed in Japan and popular in Japan, but now they're super popular here too. Another brand, OSP, I'm sure you've heard of that. Depths, Geekrack, Jackal. We have a few Jackal baits too. That's a brand that's owned by Shimano, and they're made in Japan as well. Not only are Japanese lures known to be, I think the first thing, they're kind of known to be a little expensive. Everyone thinks, oh, JDM, that's going to be expensive. And most of the time, they're right. They're not cheap. But when I think of JDM, first of all, I think that, well, for one, they're expensive. But Japan, for many years, even back 20, 25 years, they were known to have to be pretty much the pinnacle of innovation, craftsmanship, and artistry. I remember reading, like, you know, Ontario Outdoors, Outdoor Canada magazines, like back from, like, you know, the 90s, right? And they would be talking about using Japanese, you know, oh, we're using Japanese fishing lures. And it was just like a jerkbait. Like, now that's pretty common. You go to any fishing store and JDM stuff is on all the shelves. But back then, people were just starting to realize that, you know, these baits, they're well designed, they're innovative, they've got really good hooks, and they're designed to fish better than some of the stuff that we've been using over here for decades and decades. So a little bit about Duo Realis has been making lures since 1995. So it's not like one of those companies like Rapala that's been making lures since trees started to grow, but it's been almost 30 years they've been making lures, which is a long time. And I couldn't find any like updated records of like how many lures they've sold, but back in like 2016, it said that they've sold 20 million lures. So I don't know how much it would be now, but safe to say they've sold tens of millions of lures. And they also make, in Japan, they also make Duo, but they also make a ton of other brands of lures, most of which I've never even heard of, but they're all the popular brands over there. If they need a lure made, they go to Duo, because Duo has 30 years of like the best experience of making these baits. So they make tons of stuff. Now, I got this idea for an interesting fishing fact on this topic because I was watching a video on YouTube, and I'll link it down below. And it's from the Hookup Tackle in Arizona. And Ben, the owner of that store, it's like one of the biggest JDM. I think it is the biggest Japanese lure stores in North America. He sells all kind of bougie stuff, but he actually went on a tour in the Duo Realis factory. I saved that to my watch later last night, and it sat there for like 3-4 months, and I was like, ah, I'm not gonna watch it. Seems kind of boring. It's a factory tour, but I'm glad I watched it because it was super, super interesting. And it goes to show like how much quality and craftsmanship goes into these baits. And we're going to explain later why you should probably try some of these. the owner of the hookup tackle, he goes into this factory and they take him around and they show him literally everything. And they show him each step of like making these lures. And I thought it was super interesting. It shows like how much skilled work, like oftentimes we think, oh, like lures, they're made in a factory. They're just slapped together. This is like the opposite of that. These are like skilled workers meticulously putting these things together. The quality control is insane. And the paint jobs are like artistry. It's not just like done. It's literally insane. The cool thing about the video, which I found instantly cool, was the huge test tank that they have in this factory. They have this tank, and I couldn't find any like info on like how big it actually is, but it is big enough that you can cast like fully as far as you can straight. This tank must be like 150 feet like long, 30, 40 feet wide, and it's like 25 feet deep.
And that's with their weight transfer system and their jerk baits too. You can launch those things.
Yeah. It's not like the tank at Bass Pro Shops. Like this is a huge two-story tank. So if you're the guy at the top casting the baits, there's actually on the second floor down underneath, it's just like the whole wall is an aquarium. You look and you can see like right into this test tank and it has fish in it, but that's not the main purpose. But there's actually all kinds of structure in this tank. So there's like a rock pile. There's like, you know, a bunch of logs, there's, you know, sand, there's like branches. So they can test and see how these different lures react or handle different circumstances underwater. And then they also do all kinds of crazy scientific tests on like watching like how the baits like twitch. So they'll have like a whole table of jerk baits and it'll be like, oh, this is prototype one of 17. And then they'll be casting it out. And guys underneath are with clipboards taking notes on literally any little thing and like measuring like the distance that they twitch to the side or how much they wobble. And they go through all these prototypes until they find the one that's literally perfect. It just blew my mind. Like this tank is huge. If I had that in my backyard, I'd never leave. I would just fish there all the time. So there a lot of testing goes into these baits. They're not just a company that just slaps together a lure and they're like, yeah, it wobbles. That's fine. Like, no, like this is the kind of company that they want everything to be absolutely perfect. Now, the cool thing is the assembly area in the factory, it's super, super clean. You look in this video and it looks like it's like a research medical facility. It's like everything's white and stainless steel. There's like super bright LED lights everywhere. Like it's super clean. And they're sitting at the tables making the baits. And I'll just go briefly through, like, say the making of a jerk bait is what they were making at the time. They have the two halves of the jerk bait. If you didn't know how they make basically most like jerk baits or crank baits, it's two halves and then they glue it together. And before they glue it together, obviously they put in, you know, the ball bearings and all the hook hangers and all that stuff before it gets glued together. But Duralis, they actually put this chemical on both halves. So when they stick them together, they put clamps all the way around the bait. And that chemical actually like fuses the plastic together, like it melts it together and creates like almost like a plastic welded seam so that piece of plastic now is not two pieces anymore. It is one because it has been actually sealed together and welded together, kind of like mend it, Andrew.
It's a lot like, sounds a lot like the like plumbing, like with drains using ABS or PVC glue. And it's a solvent weld, which is it's an acid and it essentially eats away at each side of the plastic. So they, when the molecules start to dry in and they realign, they're actually locked together now. So yeah, it's a solvent weld.
So it's the highest quality of like the connections. I'm sure we've all used some cheap lure that hits a rock and it breaks in half. Doesn't happen on these because it's one piece.
I'm not going to mention any names.
So the next part is after they do all the assembly and the lures passed through like so many hands touch this bays as it's getting made. It's crazy the amount of people involved in this. So to enter into the paint room, you actually have to go through the AirTech dust and static removal chamber. You know, those chambers you walk in, it's like, and it blushes all the water, like, blows all the air onto you. And it removes all the static and the dust particles because inside of their paint factory area, you can't have one single piece of dust falls into the clear coat. Cause I'll tell you why in a second. So the lures, they're expertly painted. And again, we watch a lot of YouTube videos of like, you know, guys that make baits, like say like Marlon Bates, and his paint jobs are absolutely fantastic. That's small batch. This is a factory after all. So it's not the same as like a small batch guy, but they're literally artists. I don't even say like they're painters, they're artists because they actually have to learn how to paint these baits exactly the same every single time. And I thought that it was interesting that they start the painters off doing simple work like clear coats. And then after years of working at the factory, as they get better, you can basically work up to being like an artisan, like lure pattern and painter. They're so meticulous about their baits that they literally hold them up side by side. And if it's the same baits, they have to look exactly the same, and they're all painted by hand. So they have stencils for some of the like patterns and stuff, but everything else, they have to be able to mix the colors, paint the right sections of the bait, and they both have to look exactly the same. And they get to the point where, like, obviously if you do something all the time and you're skilled, it's going to happen, but it's just, it's crazy. Like, you don't think of how much work goes into just painting like a jerk bait. You're like, oh, it's just, you know, a few sprays. And like, this is like layers and layers and layers of stuff. They said generally up to 10 different layers per bait, plus the clear coat. So that's insane. And the last thing I'll say about the factory tour, and I recommend you watch this video, it's really, really cool, is the quality control is insane. Like, I know we're not going to name any names, but there are some other brands where you hear a lot of people say, you know what? The quality control in that brand on their baits has just gone downhill. Like, lips break off, the paint chips off. You're like, what happened? Like, why is it trash? Duo, on the other hand, quality control, they actually have inspectors that are there, not just to like, okay, here's a bait, it looks good. They're actually looking to find flaws. Like, that is their job, is to actively find flaws. They said one piece of dust in the clear coat, that lure's not sold. They literally get rid of it. Like, I'm sure some of those guys stuff them in the pockets and try not to hook themselves and use it themselves. Any little flaw in these baits and they're done. They're like, nope, they don't get sold. So I've noticed that, like, a lot of baits you get and you look at them in the package, you're like, wow, that's a really good looking bait. But the dual ones, from the ones that I have, and I know the ones you have, you look at them and you're just like, some of the colors, you're like, that is crazy. Like, the paint jobs are just absolutely insane. And they have a lot of really cool matte colors. I got this like perch. It's a gold perch and it's matte. And then the one I caught the recent pike on, it's like a matte fire tiger. Now, the last thing I want to say is, I know people think JDM, it's expensive. Hear me out. Hear me and Andrew out. Why should you buy Duo? Not just Duo, but any JDM. But Duo is one of the brands that I would highly recommend. It's because they're not that expensive. With every other lure becoming more and more expensive, like, what about Rapalas, Andrew? Like,
you're going to be spending, you know, including tax, $20 on a good Rapala jerk bait, unless you're using the Husky jerk. But as soon as you want to be able to cast 30% further and you're going the X-Wrap or the Ripstop or something with the weight transfer system, you know, or even they have their new, I forget what they're called, like the Pro Series, they have
the Maverick.
Like, that's a nice looking jerk bait. But that one, I think, is over $22. You're paying premium price because it's a premium jerk bait.
Exactly. So like the bait brands, like Rapala and a bunch of other brands, but like the bait brands that we're used to spending a reasonable amount of money on for a jerk bait, they are now basically JDM pricing. So like for me, I'd rather get something that is super quality control, handmade in Japan with epically sharp hooks, really good weight transfer system, and just amazing patterns for literally maybe $2 more than something that is kind of, you know, maybe pretty good, but not as good as that. So I know a lot of people will be like, oh, I like this certain brand, but try some of these JDM baits, these Duo Realises, like these ones, they start at about $18.99. So that may sound expensive if you're just getting into the sport, but the way I always think is, like, if I'm going pike fishing and I'm using a jerkbait, say like 80% of the day for weeks at a time, if I spend $20 on one bait, that's not that bad. You don't need to buy like 50 of them, just buy one. So anyway, for all the baits that we try, we recommend stuff that we actually like and actually catch fish on. Duo Realis baits, again, you can pick them up anywhere, any local store, Gagnon Sports, Peterborough Pro Tackle, anywhere that sells high-end tackle should have Duo Realis. They're fantastic baits and they work really good, but we'll get into the fish story later. So that's my interesting fishing fact, but I do recommend to watch that movie. I'm going to put the link down in the bio.
I agree with everything you said, Jesse. That's, we've had many discussions on that fact too. And like we even talked about, what if we only had so much money to go spend at a store? Like, you're not just going to get jigs and soft plastics. You have to get baits. What are you going to buy? And I would rather buy one good, like high quality jerk bait with a leader so I don't get snapped off, bitten off, than to buy three, you know, perhaps lower quality jerk baits, because I know that I have way more confidence. I feel I would get way more fish landed using that one bait than three different ones that are just, you know, maybe not as premium.
Yeah. And just to add one thing to that, I know we're kind of rambling about jerk baits, but the other day when we were fishing, I started off using a Husky jerk, which is, the Rapala Husky jerk is a great lure. They're $10. Mm-hmm. At my local shop, they're $10. I've caught tons of fish on them. We both have. They're great. Everything from pike to salmon to bass, everything. But for $10, you may think, well, that's half the cost of this dual bait. They have no weight transfer system in them.
You were yelling at your reel, like, this isn't supposed to backlash.
Yeah, I was casting into the wind and they don't have a weight transfer system in it. They just like fly through there like a boomerang and you get backlashes. You can't cast as far. you put on one of these duo baits with the weight transfer system in it. When you cast, all the weight goes to the back and they fly like a dart.
Yeah.
Right through the wind, and they cast literally, I'd say 50% farther.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I'd say at least 30 to 40% farther. So you're casting farther, you're covering more water. Hopefully you're catching more fish. So that's another thing. You're paying a little bit extra, but you're getting a lot of benefit.
Yes. There's value to the extra money there. You know, that's a great option for spring pike. We're going to get into that. Lure is going to come back up this episode. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
For perhaps more than one reason. Jesse's going to have a story later on. We're going to get him to regale us with that in a bit.
Regale.
I love springtime. It's my favorite time of year is the spring. And spring pike is something like spring is, I would say, the best time for pike fishing, especially like ice out. Even in those early months, you know, they're approaching or just post spawn. So we're going to go into a little bit about their behavior. These guys, they are kind of a cool water fish. They're not a hot water fish or warm water. They're kind of like cool water fish is really their like prime of where they want to be, you know, where they're most active. So we're going to look into some of the opportunities that we can get to get into some of these trophy-sized pike. And I can now say trophy-sized pike because I was in the boat when one was caught. So the first one we're going to talk about is where pike are, or their behavior, I should say. So during the winter, we know that pike, like we talked about it before, they're under the ice, they're active. Pike can even start spawning under the ice if need be. But they are generally a lot slower because of those cold temperatures. The lake's at, you know, 4 degrees Celsius even sometimes, or close to that. As we talked about, a temperature affects the behavior of fish tremendously. But when they have ice out and the water starts to climb up and some of these different areas have warmer water, that is going to draw pike right to them. Do you know what the optimal temperature? They actually did tests on what temperature water pike prefer to be in. Even choosing the correct temperature of water over perhaps a more abundant food source. So temperature is very important to these fish. What do you think the best temperature is?
That's a hard one. I'm going to say like in the 50 degree range.
It's a little bit warmer. I was a little surprised. They can thrive in those colder temperatures, but between 64 and 68 degrees, which is, that's Fahrenheit. So between 18 and 20 degrees Celsius. Which is warmer than I had initially thought. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, let's say your body of water doesn't get that warm. Well, it's not like there's going to be no pike in it. But that is the optimal growing temperature for pike. So if they can live in that area and they continue eating in that area, they will be growing faster and longer and better than pike in other temperature ranges. So in the springtime, where would you say is the best places to find pike? And as a big hint, the warmer water is where it opens up first.
Yeah. So where we usually start looking for pike in the spring is like we're looking in shallow bays. Mm-hmm. You're going to see areas that have like a dark mud bottom because when the sun hits it, it'll retain more heat. We have noticed though when we're boating around that the temperature difference, there will be a fair bit of a temperature difference when you're in say like 12, 13 feet as when you push into these back bays and they're maybe 3 feet deep. And, you know, they have all those like optimal areas like the mud bottom. So that's generally where we're going to start. And then if we don't find them there, we know to kind of move a bit deeper and just keep finding, you know, where those fish are. But that's my favorite place to catch them when they go up shallow when the sun's out. They love it.
When they're looking for these warmer temperatures, and right now, like this time of year, the pike, they're kind of getting ready for their spawn. They're not quite spawning yet, I would say. I know this winter has been extremely mild overall. A lot of areas that normally freeze over didn't freeze over even. So that has kind of put it's going to change a little bit of the timing for different species of fish. But usually April to May, the pike are starting to move from their winter grounds and going to feed up. So that I would suggest is probably going to be happening a bit earlier, but they're moving from the deeper water where they have been. And by deeper, I mean, you know, let's say 20 to 30 feet in these lakes over winter. And now the warmer temperature is now at the top of the water column again. It's not at the bottom of the lake. So they're going to be moving up to the top, but they can be on their way. So like Jesse said, if they're not in those shallow bays, they could often be perhaps on their way still. They don't all of a sudden, oh, today's a day and I'm going to shoot over this way 2 kilometers. Like that's not exactly how they do it. They'll kind of work their way across and move gradually to their kind of spring areas. The biggest thing that they say, and I would agree myself. I know I've experienced it. My favorite place to fish for pike is river mouths. I remember reading articles growing up of like ice out pike, and the river mouth, because of the flow of water, will often break up the ice and move it out of the river mouth first, even if it's still cold. And they always say the river mouth is where you want to be. That can attract pike and does attract pike. So obviously rivers, but it could be like ditches from like snow melt. And perhaps it's not a year round thing where you're getting water coming through that culvert over there, but it could be a source for pike to come because it's going to have a little bit warmer water. It's flowing, it's melting, it's getting heat from the ground, and it's coming in perhaps not a designated river, but that's another source of water inflow, and that can draw pike. So think a little bit outside of the box. Even if you think you've fished this lake for years and you might know, oh, this is the river, I always go here. Great spot. But let's say there's 10 boats there one day. You know, do yourself a favor and try looking and seeing maybe there's some other areas, maybe a smaller, like a culvert or a runoff or something like that that's pouring in that could, or even a small spring. You might see like little trickle of water coming in. And I know so many times I was fishing like on a larger river or on these lakes, and you just see this like little, like this is a good puddle draining, a small little spring coming out of the side. And that's where I catch the pike.
Yeah.
It's kind of picturesque, but that's kind of what holds them there.
And just to add to that, I've seen pike in weird spots too. So like I've been steelhead fishing in late March, early April, down to some of the lower ends of the creeks. You'll be float fishing in like some frog water, and you'll see like a big pike swim by.
Mm-hmm.
Up the creek. And again, obviously pike go into like, they push into marshes and creeks to start, you know, looking to spawn and stuff. But it's just weird to see them because, you know, you're catching a rainbow trout one cast. The next time you look over, there's a 35 inch northern with a bunch of males chasing it around. You're like, whoa. So you will see them. And another weird spot. Remember that time we went carp fishing?
Yeah.
I think that was in early May. The area that we fish is like a marsh. And on the other side, it kind of like, it's an overflow. Like there's, you'd never think there's a fish in there. It looks literally 6 inches deep, just a bunch of frogs and like, you know, logs in there. And one time I said to Andrew, we were walking down and I was like, hey, wouldn't it be funny if I caught a fish in here? So I tied a jerkbait on that I happened to have in my box. Because where we go carp fishing, sometimes you see pikes. I always have a jerkbait in the box. I tied it on. I just chucked it in there. One, two twitches, and this pike just came up and smoked it like in 6 inches of water. And we were just joking. I was like, there's no way there's a fish in here. And I don't know if the thing got trapped in there, like when it came in earlier to spawn, the water levels dropped, or if it actually somehow squirtled its way up in there. But It's crazy the weird skinny water that they'll push up into when they're getting ready to spawn.
Absolutely, they can as long as their backs are wet, and sometimes even if that. I know there was a small creek that would run through a cow field up near Beaverton, and the pike could, especially back in the day, they used to spear them apparently, but they used to spawn up this little, like tiny tributary. Like it dries up in the summer even, but in the spring these little pike, they'd run up and they'd just be going up, and they're maybe halfway covered in water, and that's what they're looking for. They will spawn between 40 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit is their spawning temperature that they're going to start, and where they spawn is in shallow bays, in small creeks, tributaries. So it's not odd that river mouths and stuff like that, and these mouths of bays and stuff, is where they're staging, just like how we talked about before about steelhead last week, how they're staging in front, you know, at the river mouths in the lake, and they start before they start their run up. Fish do that. That's not just for the salmonoid creatures or species. So pike are doing the same thing. They're at those river mouths, so as soon as it's ice out, they're getting prepped, waiting for that water temperature to reach between that 40 and 50 degree mark where they can actually start their spawn. So if you have a thermometer or a little fish finder when you're out and about, if you can find areas where that temperature is starting to approach that mark faster than others or other areas in that lake, chances are you're going to be finding where these pike are staging, getting ready and prepped and feeding up, and huge bellies getting ready for their spawn. Now, a couple techniques, I feel like we covered pretty well as to where they're going to be under body of water, but a couple techniques. What would you say is your favorite spring fishing technique for pike?
There's so many ways to catch them, but the way, like the other day, I'm not going to get into the whole story, but me and Andrew were supposed to go steelhead fishing. And then I said to him, you know what, let's go pike fishing because the creeks are so crowded. It was like 13 degrees that day. I'm like, there's going to be 50 million guys down at the creek. So I said, let's go pike fishing. We'll dust the boat off. It was in my workshop. It was covered in sawdust. So we dusted off the boat, and I just like grabbed a bunch of lures, and I just grabbed like a, you know, like a 3,600 tray. Like that's all I brought. Not a lot of lures, maybe like 10 lures. Mm-hmm. And most of them are the same. But if I only had one lure, jerkbait, that's all you need. Like generally speaking, jerkbait, that's what I use probably 80% of the time for spring pike.
Yeah. And again, right now we're talking about spring pike, like this time of year, it's pre-spawn. So this water temperature, they're still moving slow and sluggishly. One of the main forages for these fish is minnows, other fish. But I say minnows by just, you know, smaller fish. Could be a wide variety of species they'll feed on. But what happens is in the springtime, any fish that were caught up in a creek or up that river, up that tributary, that got frozen in ice or died because of, you know, the rapid changes in temperature or whatever it may be, they start flowing down. And these pike, they're sitting, they're putting on this big feed before their spawn, and they're watching these dead fish just come by, and they'll come up and grab it. A slow presentation is key in the spring. Again, we've talked about they are active fish. They're the fastest freshwater fish. You know, in short speeds, they're the fastest freshwater fish, but they're not a cold water fish. So at these temperatures, they're still moving sluggishly. Just keep in mind, later on, as temperatures start to warm up, again, this year, when it opens for pike, if the trend keeps going like this for the weather, the spawn could be early. The spawn would finish early, perhaps. So take a look at your water temperatures. If it starts reaching above that 50 degrees, getting closer to that 60 degree, 64 degree mark, they become more and more active as the temperature rises. And keeping in mind as to what else is happening during that time of year will dictate what these pike are feeding on. So when frogs start to emerge, the pike are going to eat frogs. The largest bulges I've ever found in like pike bellies when I filleted them have consistently been frogs. I have caught a few that have like there's a perch or there's a thing, but I've caught, I'd say 10 pike or so in my life that just had a massive bulge. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see what that was. And it was a big frog. When you hit that time of year, frogs are out there, turtles, snakes. I know there's a couple places where there's like a lot of pike, but there's tons of water snakes there. But just keep in mind, whatever you're using, pike love to strike from below. Again, they're predatory, they're ambush predators. They'll just sit in these shallow weeds. So there are times when a top water is actually amazing for pike as soon as it starts to warm up a bit. And for me, that's my favorite time of all. It's my favorite presentation for pike. But it's a little tangent. Right now, slow minnow presentations are kind of your key. Dial that in. And we're going to talk a little bit about now. I want you to share that story, Jesse, because we're talking about a slow minnow presentation. And walk us through what happened on last Sunday and what you're using and what happened exactly.
So like I mentioned, I'd say for both of us, pretty much when we go pike fishing in the early spring, we both have jerk baits on. Like I know Andrew's favorite jerk bait is the X-Wrap, mm-hmm. which he's caught tons of pike on. I've caught a lot of pike on it too. They're great baits. It's either that or like a chatterbait. Now, a chatterbait may sound like a bait that you have to retrieve too fast, but what we found, just on a slight tangent, is we use the big blade. Mm-hmm. So what I do for early spring pike when the water's still cold is I'll use the big blade chatterbait, which has a massive blade. So it works a lot slower. And then I'll put a big crawbait on the back. So that has a lot of lift. So I can actually retrieve this very slowly. Now, if the water temperatures are a bit higher, that's a really good option. But we were out fishing, slid the flatback canoe into where we were fishing. The water temperature was 37 degrees, which is very, very cold. I remember I put a poll up on Instagram and I said, is this too early for pike? And I actually had a lot of people that catch a lot of fish said it was too early. And I was like, well, you know what you're talking about clearly, because we're going to catch fish today. So anyway, we're fishing, and generally where we fish, when the water's a little warmer, we'll go into the back bays, literally 2-3 feet of water, and we will slam them. We've had days where we've caught like 7 or 8 in like 20 minutes. Like they're just stacked back there. And one of the best baits back there, again, just like an X-Wrap, something like that.
A ripstop. The ripstops are a little bit shallower, I find. Those are amazing for shallow bays.
Yep. Or spinner baits or spoons, swim jigs, anything like that. So anyway, we tried that area. We didn't see anything. So I said to Andrew, let's go. There's a nice deep hole. Let's go to the deep hole. We went down there. We didn't see anything. The water is a bit murky, so I tied on this Fire Tiger Dual Realis jerkbait. This is a 115, so it's a little bit bigger. It's like 5/8 of an ounce. It's a big jerkbait. We kind of drifted into this area, like out of the deep hole towards the shallows. I think we were in like 6 feet of water, 5-6 feet of water. And Andrew had a follow right up to the boat. I forget, it followed his chatterbait, I think. A little, you know, like a 20-inch pike maybe. So that our hands were starting to get cold. It was a bit chilly that day. Before we saw that pike, we're like, you know, let's go in. I don't think there's going to be any fish, you know, trying to talk ourselves into going to Tim Hortons getting a hot coffee, right? He saw that pike come up, and even though it was a small one, we're like, oh, we're ready. We're ready. You know, fish for another hour, right? So anyway, we're casting, and I'm fishing a bass jerkbait rod because generally this time of year, you're not catching giants in this spot that we're fishing. So I was using a 6'9" medium light jerkbait rod, which is the same rod I use for smallmouth. It's a great rod. It's very parabolic. 10-pound line and a super thin titanium leader. I like the titanium leaders because they're so thin and lightweight. It doesn't affect the action of the bait. It doesn't make them sink too much. But anyway, I'm fishing this bait and we're fishing in 38 degree water. So when you fish a jerkbait, you're not fishing it like Kevin Van Damme. You're not like jerk, 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 jerk. You're kind of pulling the bait. It's not like a hard snap. So what I do is I do pull, pull, 10 seconds. Nothing. Pull, pull. 10 seconds, at least 10 seconds, 10, 15 seconds. So it's my thought anyway, that these big pike, the big females that are coming in, they're very visual feeders, like Andrew said. So I want to attract their attention. And a jerk bait is a great bait for attracting attention, even for bass. It makes a lot of noise, has rattles in it, right? It's a big profile. This dual realis bait actually has flat sides. So it has a lot of roll in the water and I'm using a bright color. So I'm going to give the fish a lot of chance to find it. But again, like Andrew said, it's 38 degrees. These fish are like, it's cold. They're slow moving. So anyway, I'm fishing and all morning, I think the funniest thing was all morning I was snagging. Andrew didn't snag a single time. I was fishing and I'd snag a log. We'd have to back the boat up and try to hit it with the oar to get it out. I snagged like 5 or 6 times. So it got to the point where I chucked out my bait. I twitched it once or twice. And then I was kind of just like turning the trolling motor and kind of heading back to shore as he started to go. And then as soon as I twitched the rod, I just felt like I snagged. And I just was like, ah, oh, snagged. Andrew's like, oh. And then all of a sudden, the snag started to pull line off my reel. And I was like, this is weird. And it was just slowly coming out. Like because the boat was also moving. So I was like, maybe it's just me moving the boat that's causing line to come off my reel. Then all of a sudden, it just like started moving the opposite direction of the boat. And I'm like, oh, that Andrew's like, no, that's a fish. That's a fish.
I could see the line tracking against the horizon. I'm like, that's moving.
Yeah. But it wasn't moving like fast. No. It was just kind of like, and I was like, you know what? I think I snagged a carp because that's happened to us before. Like if you're fishing a jerk bait, carp happen to be in the area and you snag and one in the back lot or something.
In that area.
So it happens, unfortunately. So I'm like, you know what? I must have snagged a carp because this thing is just bulldozing slowly across. I started pulling on it and it just went and it literally shot like 30 feet in front of the boat. And I was like, holy smokes. Like it has to be a carp. I'm trying to pull this fish up again on a medium light jerk bait rod. 10-pound line. And I'm like, it's a carp. It's a carp. I'm like, if this is a pike, it's huge. If it's a pike and it came up, we saw its tail flip out of the water and it's like that red and blotchy tail.
Yeah.
And I was like freaking out. I was like, oh, it's a pike. It's a pike. It's a huge pike. And Andrew's like, oh, and he's like trying to move around in the boat and find the net. And I'm trying to pull this fish up. And I had literally no control over this fish. It was just like, it was telling me where to go. And then it got up to the side of the boat. I finally got it in. This is like literally, I'd say 7 or 8 minutes in.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't horse the thing at all. And it got right beside the boat and Andrew tried to scoop it and it went right under the boat. And my rod was like underneath the boat because I couldn't swing it behind the boat because the trolling motor was down and it was a nightmare. I was like starting to stress out. Finally, it came up and Andrew scooped it and we both were like, yeah. All the people on that lake were just like, what is with those guys out there? But
Jesse in the net. Was being a champ. He caught that thing. He was fighting it like a tuna. Because he's got the trolling motor in reverse. He's just backing down on it.
Because I was chasing it.
So he's just backing down on it, picking up the slack. And the whole time I was chasing it again,
with the trolling motor.
I want to say, I think we handled ourselves as excited as we were. We didn't get overexcited and flip the canoe because we were in Jesse's sports pal, which is nice and stable. But I had to turn myself around while sitting down. I didn't want to stand up while Jesse's fighting his fish. And so I'm trying to swivel myself around in this canoe. The water's 38 degrees. I do not want to go in there. And then we have this like short-handled net. So I'm just getting ready with it. I'm like, hey, my rod's away. Take my time. As soon as I get the opportunity, this is getting in the net. So it worked. It worked out. And what size was it, Jesse?
So it was 36, but it was the fattest 36 I've ever caught. Like I've caught 36s before, but this one was... comparing the pictures was night and day.
That doesn't
sound big. Like I always see people are like, oh, you got to catch that 40. That's the size you want to catch for pike. They're like basically like respectable size. But in my opinion, anything over
36 is 3 feet.
It's 3 feet, yeah. And this fish was literally thick. Like, I was holding the water. It was a pre-spawn female, so it was full of eggs. And it was just super fat. Huge. And
we were joking.
It was beautiful.
You know how the pike has almost like, it looks like two halves to its belly, right? We were joking. This thing, we called it the Dolly Parton of pike.
Yeah.
It had not only like huge shoulders and a big hump in the back, but it had the biggest, thickest belly, like right behind its gills I've ever seen.
it was a giant.
It was working 9 to 5, I'll tell you that much.
And for that area that we're fishing, like, I know if you go up north, the guys are like, oh, I'll catch 40s up, you know, and Muskokas and all that stuff. That's great. Lake Ontario, I know a lot of the guys fish the Toronto Island area. They catch a lot of like fish that are in the 36 to 40 inch range or even bigger. But in this particular place we were fishing, I fished there for years. I've never seen a fish close to that size myself ever. And I fished there for like 10 years. Yeah. So we were really excited and the water was ice cold. My hands were numb. Andrew's hands were numb. I was like reviving it in the water, both my hands in the water. And then as soon as I released it, my hands were just shaking and we were both rubbing our hands together. It's like,
I was trying to like get footage and film it. I'm so worried. I'm trying to hold my arms as close as possible because as soon as I extended them, I was just shaking like mad. I'm like, please don't let this video turn out bad for Jesse.
But I think the moral of that story is it's never too early to catch pike. And if you start early in the season, like very early, like 38 degree water, you just have to fish baits that are extremely slow, like jerk baits, and really, really long pauses, really long. And I would recommend a quality bait with sharp hooks because sometimes these fish engulf it. Other times they just nip it.
Yeah. Oftentimes you won't feel that strike. Like you said, they'll hit on the pause. So you won't feel it. They'll just kind of swim up and then all of a sudden it's in their mouth. So you don't know what's there until your next like kind of pull or jerk. And you want that moment when they are feeling movement for that hook to start pricking in and actually hooking onto them. But Jess and I were talking even that morning, talking about temperatures again and it being so cold. Again, it's early in the year. It's not that cold for this time of year normally. You know, Jess is like, oh, people are like, do you think it's too early? And it was made conversation. I'm like, no, like you can catch ice, pike through the ice. People do all they target them through the ice. You can catch pike whenever. All you have to do is locate it and fish slow enough. And yes, it's open water now. But the way I would look at it, if you're trying to target them, is fish them like how you would. They're feeding the same way right now as they were under the ice. It's just now it's open water. So if you can cover a bit of ground, like Jesus said, you do a very slow retrieve, long pauses with a jerk bait, but you can still fan cast. If you're fishing from shore, you can fan cast and cover a huge area of water, not just under that float or out of that one hole. So it is a bit easier to kind of locate them as they slowly move around this time of year because it is open water. But at the same time, it has to be just as slow as your ice fishing presentation.
Yeah. I thought before we go any farther, we could talk about our giveaway partner.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. Perfect.
Oh, perfect. So 2 weeks ago, we gave away CanCast tickets, which that was awesome. We're actually really looking forward to CanCast. And speaking of CanCast, this giveaway partner that we're going to talk about right now is actually coming to CanCast. So
nice.
Definitely check them out. So I actually talked to these guys the other day. Matt and Adam from the Great Canadian Fishing Store. There's lots of accounts and stores that pop up, but this one actually, when I first saw them, I was like, that's a good idea. I remember me and Andrew talking about it on the way up to a fishing trip one time. So the Great Canadian Fishing Store, it's an online store. They exclusively offer fishing gear from independent Canadian manufacturers. So if you go on their website, so they have a huge selection. If you look through their website, it's not just like a few things. There's tons of stuff. There's a huge selection. It's all high quality crafted baits and lures, and they're all made by experienced and passionate family owned businesses coast to coast. And it's true. I was looking through their website. Like, again, we're an Ontario fishing podcast. We know a lot of the Ontario bait makers, but I'm looking through their website and it says like the bait and it says where it's from all over British Columbia, East Coast, all over Canada. It's crazy. So you can find lots of different kinds of baits. They have soft baits, hand poured jigs, hand carved crankbaits. Lots of stuff. And it's not just stuff that you see at a store. It's all unique. It's stuff that you're like, oh, that's interesting. That's cool. Or like me and Andrew said, I wish I thought of that.
And since it's from a bunch of independent makers, like manufacturers, the selection, the range is huge. It's not just, you know, one local shop or one local guy making everything. It's a collaboration of everyone.
Yeah.
So your options are huge.
For sure. Now, the cool thing is, like I mentioned, the Great Canadian Fishing Store, not only will they be at CanCast at April 7th, but they're also going to be at the Toronto Sportsman Show from March 14th to 17th. Now, the Sportsman Show has always been just like a massive show. Now, it's not all fishing like CanCast, but there's a lot of fishing stuff there. So if you definitely are going to the Sportsman Show, definitely check out the booth there. I saw some of their pictures from the Woodstock Bait Swap. They had a huge place there, and the Great Canadian Fishing Store was there. And I really like their idea. So they have basically, say you're a small bait maker, and you're like, I make this bait, but I don't want to, you know, go to a show and spend all this money setting up a huge table and all this stuff. They do all that for you. I don't know exactly how it works, but basically you would talk to them and rent some space from them so that they can sell your stuff for you and display it for you. And it's their displays are beautiful. And like a lot of, again, a lot of the Ontario bait makers that we know, I'm looking through their display on their Instagram posts and it's like, oh, I know that guy. I know those baits. Oh, those are cool. So I asked them and I said, hey, we're doing a pike fishing episode. I was like, can you send me some of the baits that you would recommend for pike? So they sent me a bunch of these cool baits. I thought I'd just mention them quick because they're all very unique and interesting baits. This one is very cool. It's based out of Calgary. It's from a company called Leadhead. And this lure is called, it's kind of, you know, Andrew will know what this is all about. It's called the Freak. So the company, again, it's called Leadhead. This is called the Freak. This is actually a 1 ounce jig. And this is something that is very unique, Andrew. I would 100% use that for pike.
Yeah.
It's basically, if you're listening to this on audio version, this is a jig with a swim bait tail. It has a skirt and a paddle tail, but it also has not only the regular hook on the top, but it has a stinger treble hook underneath. So, you know, sometimes pike, they will engulf the bait, but I find that on a single hook bait, oftentimes they can flip that hook out of their mouth pretty easy when they do their death roll head shake right beside the boat. So having that extra treble underneath, if you get that pinned in the fish's mouth, it's not coming off. So that's a pretty cool looking bait. Bunch of cool colors. Again, for pike, we like really bright colors. So these colors here, especially this one, really like it.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah. So that's one. Another lure that they were talking about, I like the names of these companies. I love when companies have actually cool names. So this company is called Dem Lures. And then their slogan is, you need Dem Lures. So they have these 3¾-inch trolling spoons. It's a 2-pack. They're handmade, beautiful baits. This isn't the kind of stuff that you can just find at, like, you know, your local Canadian Tire. These are actually handmade by people that love fishing. So definitely check those out. Those are actually made in Ontario. This one, I know Andrew will get excited about because this actually looks very similar to a lure that he used to catch fish on all the time. Now, this is from Fosco Lures located in Port Credit, Ontario. And this is the Minnow Spinner. And I know Andrew used to slam fish on these all the time. The cool thing about bait is these are handmade, but that's also turkey feather on the hook. I love touches like that, like little touches like turkey feather. That's awesome. So that's one. And then the last one we're going to mention, again, there's tons on the website. Like you could literally spend like an hour just looking through this website. This here is my personal favorite. This looks really cool. This one is a tungsten spinner bait, and it actually weighs 7/8 of an ounce, which is a bit bigger, but for pike, that would be sick. And I'm going to choose this color here, white. Just a big, beautiful spinner bait from this company here, which is, I think you pronounce it Underdock, which is a cool name for a bait. If you can flip one of these baits under a dock, you might catch a fish. So again, I really, really like this company bringing all of our local bait makers, not only across Ontario, but also across all of Canada. You know, you're buying quality, you know, like we said about Duo, how they put so much time and effort. These local bait makers, these guys and girls that make these things, they're not like the big brands. Like they put so much meticulous effort into these baits and they're handcrafted. They look over them before they sell them. That bait that they're making, that is something that they love. It's going to be the best quality that they can possibly get for it. So you're getting a great bait and you're supporting some people. You have to think, like we always say, when you support local, when you buy something from like Bass Pro Shops, no one cares. When you buy local, someone does a little happy dance because someone bought their product. So that's awesome. And they slam fish too. So the giveaway is going to be a $75 promo code for their website. $75.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like if I had $75 on their website, I'd be like, I'd be buying a bunch of those spinner baits and those freak jigs.
2 minutes would be gone.
Yeah, I know. See, if I won it, I'd have to give Andrew half. But so that's a really awesome giveaway. And again, if you're going to the Sportsman Show, definitely check them out. Tell them that we sent you. And if you're going to CanCast, which I know a lot of you guys and girls are, definitely check them out. And again, tell them that you heard us on the podcast, because that really helps them see that doing this giveaway is actually good for them. So we appreciate Matt and Adam for setting that up with us. Again, mm-hmm. we love working with local companies, especially when this local company is also working with many local companies. So it's kind of like a perfect fit for this show. So we really appreciate that. So if you are interested in entering this giveaway, our giveaways are only for Patreon members. So if you support our show, our podcast every week, or you have to support it once a month, not every week. We're not that greedy. But if you do support us on Patreon, you are automatically entered into all of the giveaways. So definitely check out the Patreon app or go on the website to see how you can enter.
So I have a couple little segments to finish off the show. But before we get there, there's one last thing I want to talk about on the topic of pike fishing. So we have a few of our favorite baits. We did talk a little about, you know, jerk baits. They're great. Chatter baits. Awesome. You know, spoons, spinners, they can be effective. What would you say would be your, we already talked about the big, specifically the big blade chatterbait. I'll go even further and say a big blade white chatterbait would be my ideal chatterbait to throw for spring pike. What would be your ideal jerkbait to throw if you had to choose one?
I want to say the Duo Realis, just because that's the one I slammed that big boy on. But I'm not overly picky. As long as it's a bait, like I said, that casts far, has a weight transfer system. Usually in early spring, it's windy. I don't want some bait that's just going to be light and not cast very far. Pick your favorite jerk bait with a weight transfer system that is 4 to 5 inches long. And for colors, oftentimes with the spring melt going on, the water's usually off color. So we've done really good with Fire Tiger. I know when the water's a bit clearer, me and Andrew do really good on white. So I just pick something bright. Again, pike are visual feeders. I'm not saying you can't catch them on more natural colors, but even in clear water, they love Fire Tiger. You can't go wrong. Like, everyone's like, Fire Tiger, that's all you need for pike. So
I think you misunderstand a little bit. Great information, but I want to know your opinion. This is beyond the fact of general. So if you pick the Duo Realis, if you had to pick one specific one, yeah, and ask you right now, would you pick the Duo Realis?
I honestly would. And again, you know how many jerk baits I buy. Andrew knows. Yep. I have literally probably like 30 to 50 of them. Like, I buy them all the time and I don't use half of them, because I'll buy one and be like, oh, I like that. And then I'll buy another one. And I haven't even used the ones I own. So like, I've tried tons of them, and I have found that just that Duo, it casts great. It's got super mm-hmm. like stupid sharp hooks on it. Like, the hooks mm-hmm. are just, you touch them, you bleed. You look at them, you bleed. Like, it's stupid. And
I would say
the patterns are great too.
Yeah. I would say myself, I'm trying to try a few different things. So for this year,
yep.
if I had to choose one that's like, I can only cast one jerk bait, I think I would use the Vision 110. I got a couple of those. I love those as well.
For pike?
Yeah.
Andrew loves spending $35 on a pike jerk bait. Vision 110s well, are awesome.
But I have a good leader, so I'm not worried about losing it.
True.
By the way, I make my own leaders. So if anyone's going out for pike, just, hit me up on Instagram and I'll let you know what can be done.
I'll tell you one more jerkbait that if you're into jerkbaits and you want to try out a really bougie, super nice bait, again, not cheap, but super nice, is this one right here. You've seen this one. This is the Nishini Eerie 115. These baits look just super, super natural. They cast really, really, they're a bit of a bigger bait. I think these are almost 3/4 of an ounce. But the cool thing about this bait is it actually comes with a little piece of lead on a little split ring. So you attach that to the front. So if it's a full piece of lead, it actually makes the bait sink. If you cut it in half-ish, it'll suspend. If you remove it, it slowly floats up. Now, I really like that because oftentimes when we're fishing in shallower water, I do like a bait that actually slowly rises. And the reason for that is oftentimes you're twitching around, you know, cover, you know, you got logs or, you know, a dock post or a bunch of weeds. If I'm fishing a bait slowly and I just want it to slowly rise up over that obstacle and then slowly reel it past so I don't get snagged, and then continue to work the bait. If I'm working that bait slowly and it actually is a sinking bait, it'll actually just sink down right into the snag, which I don't want. So I do like that feature. These aren't cheap, but they're really nice baits. But again, you can find all kinds of other baits too that have similar features where they have, you'll notice a lot of the jerk baits now, they're not true suspending baits. They'll actually say like slow sink or slow rise. So find a bait like Rapala has a lot like that too. I know like the Shadow Shad Rap or I forget all the Raplas are all, they sound the same, but they do have one that is a slow rising bait, which has been one of my favorites too. So I find that I snag a lot less. oftentimes when you're fishing, like I said, like they're really long, you jerk, and then you let it sit for 10 seconds. If it sinks in 10 seconds, it'll sink like right down to the bottom and you'll just be like, no pike's going to find it just sitting in the mud. So make sure you have a properly suspending or floating bait. Plus, one thing to add, you mentioned leaders. If you're using leaders, you don't want a bait that is slow sinking or suspending anyway, because the leader is going to make it sink. So if you have one that slowly floats up, that's another tip. The leader will kind of like help balance it out if it's floating up. It might be perfect. It might still slowly sink, but you can experiment and have fun with that. That's what fishing is all about, right?
And one last lure. What would be your choice for a spoon?
You know it. Len Thompson, 5 of Diamonds, number 2. You can't beat that. I don't care what anyone says. It's kind of like the Fire Tiger of jerkbaits. Like the 5 of Diamonds spoon, it's just like the contrast, the color. We did a whole episode. Actually, I'll link that down below. We did a whole episode about Len Thompson spoons and pike fishing last year. And we went into kind of the science as to why this color really works. But it's just a classic. I mean, like people have been catching thousands of fish every year on these. Hard to beat that.
Mine, I have a real soft spot. I've been using them for years.
Williams?
Is the Williams Wobbler.
Yep.
And I tell you why spring is amazing for them is because to have them to wobble properly, it's a slow retrieve. And if you're going to use it like a flutter spoon, it doesn't sink that quickly. Where if you stop reeling in like a Cleo or Len Thompson, great as they are. But in the spring, if you want that, you need that slow retrieve, it's going to be a lot harder with a thicker gauge steel. Now, you might sacrifice casting distance, but for me, I love the Williams Wobbler.
Yeah. And just to add 2 baits quick, because you can't talk about pike fishing without talking about these baits, in my opinion, is a swim bait, a big white swim bait. This is actually a perfect jig, a slim swimmer. I think that's what he calls it. It's like 5.5-6 inches long. I've got that on a 5-aught or a 6-aught flashy beast swimmer. I like this one because we fish a lot of weeds. If you don't fish in an area with a lot of weeds, I just put a really big jig head on that. Slow retrieve. This one actually has a kind of a thinner tail, so it's better for a faster retrieve. And then you got a little bit of flash down here. But this is completely weedless. You can, if you're fishing for pike around like reeds or weeds or lots of like timber, a bait like this, you can just chuck it in and just retrieve it right through that stuff. Not have to worry about it. Places where you're scared to throw a jerk bait, throw one of these and you're good. And then the other bait, I think you can't not talk about for pike as a spinner bait. This is a Blackfly Lures Big Bastard. This is a 3/4-ounce spinner bait. We like the white one. I have a big chartreuse blade on it, big white twister tail on it. Just a slow retrieve. Again, you can fish this around cover, weeds, all that stuff. And it's one of those baits that pike just love. I think probably spinner baits. I know we've been using chatter baits a lot the last few years, me and Andrew, but spinner baits for me before that were like a bait that I always had tied on for pike. Like it just, I fell in love with it. Actually, I think I caught back in the day at Andrew's cottage, I caught one of my biggest pike at that time on a spinnerbait. Remember that?
Yep.
Andrew is so mad that I beat his record until the next year.
Yeah. So I have a quick little news article, actually, I wanted to mention.
Ooh.
And it kind of ties into last week's podcast a little bit. We were talking about some of the different areas that we fished our whole lives. So this happened on the day that our last episode released. Okay. So everyone keep that in mind. The last episode being steelhead fishing. We had Angling Art on, an awesome episode. So the title of this is on Durham Region News. Ajax man charged after Pickering angler allegedly pushed into Duffin's Creek. Have you heard this, Jesse?
No, I didn't.
So
that wasn't me.
Here's the story. So Jesse, claims. 2 men fishing along Duffin's Creek early last Sunday morning were allegedly assaulted, with one of the victims reportedly being pushed into the creek, say Durham police. In the early morning hours of March 3rd, police say 2 men were fishing in the area near Church Street South and Highway 401 when a male living in a tent nearby approached the victims while allegedly brandishing a knife and made threats. The suspect then allegedly pushed one of the men into the creek. The victims did not suffer any injuries and made their way to a local police station to report the incident. So I just wanted to give that kind of as a public service announcement. I've noticed a lot more frequently now of kind of like tent cities down on especially fishing, the lower tribs and stuff like that. It doesn't list their names, but that was definitely Jesse and Arthur.
The homeless? Oh, no, the fisherman. Yeah. That's where I live, guys. This is where I am right now.
Yeah. No, so the, but I just thought it was funny because like I always feel uneasy. I'm like, man, imagine that actually being like threatened. The guy apparently was charged with assault with a weapon and uttering threats. So just be safe out there.
Yeah. Be careful.
In a lighter news, I wanted to give, just read a little rating we got, a little review. It was a 5-star, which is excellent. Keep those coming. But I loved the response. Jesse sent this to me today. He saw this on one of the message boards there. So he says, it's titled 100%.
You know this guy's listened to last season for sure.
Loons, snapping turtles, and ball nippers. Oh my. Interesting fact, these guys rock. The podcast is like a 7.3 medium heavy pole. You gotta have it. Quote for the review, just listen to AOA. This guy nailed like all the points of our podcast. So thank you very much for that review. At this time as well, we'd just like to do a little bit of housekeeping. So the reviews, all that stuff, ranking us, rating us, sorry, is super helpful, super beneficial for us as we grow the podcast and try to reach as many people as possible with, you know, hopefully this entertaining show. But there are, as usual, you mentioned a few times before, every episode you like to mention, just there are some costs that come along with that. But again, we've had some amazing support so far with our Patreon. Again, we want to give a huge shout out and thank you to everyone who's helping out in that regard. And if you'd like to support us as well, we do have the, like I said, the Patreon account you can sign up for. And there's a big benefit for doing so is, as Jesse says, you get a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling inside. But also, I made Jesse do this. No, I'm just kidding. It was a joint agreement. You are automatically entered into all the giveaways. So the one today for a Great Canadian Fishing Store, if you are a Patreon member, you are automatically entered in. You don't have to worry about it. If you win, we'll be messaging you. So that's a huge plus. It's kind of a very easy way to get entered into winning these great prizes that we have. I would say there's usually at least two a month.
Two.
Usually.
There's at least two. This month, we actually have one every week.
So there's four chances to win this month. So if you'd like to get in on that, by all means, join us on a Patreon member. There's a few different options there. It doesn't have to be the highest one. Even at the lowest level of $2 a month, you'll be entered into all those giveaways.
And the odds are pretty good. It's not housekeeping, but I thought we could just very briefly cover, I had two or three responses about interesting fish recipes.
Oh, excellent.
So if you listened to last week's episode, if you haven't already, I definitely recommend you do. It's about steelhead fishing. And we had, again, Arthur from Angling Art on. But Andrew's interesting fishing fact was all about weird and gross ways that different places prepare fish. And most of them were from Japan, interestingly enough. But I had a few people, and I'm just going to read two of them. So we actually had a guy named Ken, and he messaged me, and he said, fish recipe, as per the one-year episode intro topic about freaky fish recipes. Here's a good one. Lobster mac and cheese, but sub the lobster for burbot.
I've heard burbot is poor man's lobster.
Yes.
I'm be down for that.
I'm not going to lie. My wife makes really good lobster mac and cheese. Like she really does. Good. What I'll have to do one day is just throw a burbot in the sink for her and be like, here, clean it. I'm just kidding. She wouldn't know what to do. So another interesting recipe is I've heard of people doing this. I've never done it myself. But Rise and Find Fishing, he messaged us and said, great podcast, guys. Here's possibly a new recipe for you guys to try. And he sent me a bunch of pictures and they look pretty good. He said, fried perch skeins. Not sure if you've had them or not, but honestly tasted like a batter scrambled egg. They pretty much just taste like my batter. Like you know, a lot of times when you make fish, it just tastes like the battery, which is pretty good. He said, they're better than you expect. So I've seen people take, especially in the spring when the females are full of eggs, they'll take when you fillet a perch, oftentimes like you'll have the skeins or the skeins of the eggs, and most people just throw them out. I've heard of a lot of people that do actually fry them up. They kind of scramble up and put batter on them. So I would try it 100%. That's something I would try at least once.
I think we should try it. Like next year we go ice fishing or something. We get a perch that has some eggs in her. I think that we should actually do that, Jesse.
And I'll eat one side, you eat the other side.
Meat in the middle?
No, gross. So anyway, great episode. You know what though? Here's the bad thing, Andrew. Now I'm stoked for pike season again. Like I'm like riding that high. You know, when you catch a good fish, you're like riding that high. And the next time you fish, you catch nothing. You're like, why do I suck?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel. The latter.
Hey, Andrew killed me last year. So prepare for my year for once. You know what it is? I think it's the beard.
Yeah, the beard's helping.
My first beard of my whole life. Andrew too. And we're just, first day we go out, we slam them. First day.
So we'll finish off this episode with, as usual, the quote of the week. What do you have for us, Jesse?
Oh, I thought you were reading a poem.
Oh, okay. All right. That's true. We'll do a quick poem. I sent it to Jesse, so I made this. I personally, with no help whatsoever,
too embarrassing,
made this poem.
Yeah. And is it a tearjerker?
Someone will be crying after this one, yes. So it's on today's topic. In Ontario's lakes, when springtime arrives, anglers set out with gleam in their eyes. Their rods are ready, their spirits high, for the battle with creatures that lurk nearby. They cast their lines with skill and might, hoping to land a legendary fight. But beneath the surface, in murky gloom, lurks a predator ready to consume. With a flash of silver and a mighty splash, the water erupts in a wild clash. The line goes taut, the reel sings loud, as the angler struggles against the shroud. Through weeds and reeds, the pike does dart, a cunning foe with a hungry heart. With teeth like daggers and eyes aglow, it's a fearsome sight to friend or foe. The battle rages on in the morning light. Both fisherman and pike put up a fight. But in the end, it's the angler's hand that triumphs over the monster of the land. So raise a toast to the pike so grand, the king of the waters in Ontario's land. For in the springtime when the fishing's fine, it's the pike that reigns in its watery shrine.
That was pretty good.